It's the last day. And actually, it's the last day that Krishna's in Vrindavan. The next day he leaves. Next day he leaves. So, after Aristasura was killed, then a very extraordinary thing happened. Narada Muni had been considering that Lord Krishna has a lot of other business to take care of. He's got to kill Kamsa. Then he's got to go to Dwaraka, and there's so many demons he's got to kill over there. So there's a whole program, actually, which is there, which Lord Krishna is meant to execute. But Narada started to get into anxiety. Krishna seems to have got too absorbed in his pastimes in Vrindavan. Seems to have got carried away with himself. And looks like he may have forgotten even that he's got other duties to perform. So Narada Muni, feeling actually quite concerned in this way, he decided, I've got to intervene, I've got to do something to accelerate this particular program and how it's all executed. So what he did, quite a remarkable thing, he went and saw Kamsa. Narada Muni went and saw Kamsa and told Kamsa that you may have had some idea, but you never really knew it, but now I'll tell you. That eighth child you wanted to kill, you thought it was a girl, but it wasn't. It was a little boy. And he's still living. He's living, he's the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He's living in Vrindavan. That's where he is. He's like sort of turning Krishna in to Kamsa. So Kamsa immediately he was already disturbed, but he got extremely disturbed. So immediately he arrested Vasudeva and Devaki. They were thrown in prison. He said, I'm going to kill you in a few days. Then he called for Chanura and Mushtika, the wrestlers, and told them that we're going to try and bring Krishna here tomorrow or the next day, and we want you to get ready for a big wrestling match. We want you to kill Krishna and Balaram. So then he thought, first of all though, I'll try sending Keshi. Keshi had already been there spying with Arishtasura. So he sent Keshi, now you go and kill Krishna in Nandagram. But then he thought, if that doesn't work, we'll arrange this wrestling match. So then he called in Chanura and Mushtika. And then he called in Akrura and told him, you go to Vrindavan and you speak to Krishna very nicely and you bring him here. So all these things were done simultaneously. Keshi was sent, the wrestling match was arranged, and Akrura was sent. This all happened right in the same meeting, actually. So we might think that Narada's got into Maya or something. Actually, Narada did a similar thing before, you may know, just after Krishna appeared, I think it was. He went and told Kamsa, why don't you just kill all the young children? Because he wanted to accelerate the appearance of the Lord. Or accelerate the pastimes of the Lord. Anyway, it's not that Narada has gotten to Maya and turned against Krishna, but he does these things helping to sort of engineer the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then Narada went to see Krishna, and we'll explain that that's a few hours later, some hours later, he went to see Krishna. But we'll explain about that shortly. So anyway, Keshi was sent. Keshi, interesting history is there. Keshi was quite old. Keshi had been around for a long time. In fact, when Nanda Maharaj's father, Harijanya Maharaj, initially wanted to settle in Nandagram, this is, you know, even before Nanda Maharaj was born. So Harijanya Maharaj performed some yajna in order to get a good son, and Nanda Maharaj was born. But then actually just shortly after Nanda Maharaj was born, Keshi attacked Nandagram. And then Harijanya Maharaj, little Nanda Maharaj was just a little child, he had to abandon Nandagram and go to Gokul. So they settled there, and then Nanda Maharaj was living there, and that was where Krishna appeared, at least as the son of Nanda and Yashoda. And then later on they went back to Nandagram. And the reason they chose Nandagram was because it was like an ancestral place of residence for them. So Keshi had been around, even in the time, like at the time Nanda Maharaj was just a child, and he'd been terrorizing the Brijbasis. So Keshi was sent in, and when he went in, he saw the dead body of his friend, Arishtasura, and he got very upset. He became even more angry, even more determined to kill Krishna. So he assumed, according to the Bhagavatam, he assumed the form of a horse, giant horse, so big he could jump over trees. Very gigantic horse. So he came in, and Mother Yashoda noticed that when Krishna was at home, Mother Yashoda noticed that Krishna was becoming very restless, like he wanted to go outside. But of course she didn't want to let Krishna go outside, because this big demon horse had just arrived and he was making quite a commotion there in Nandagram. So Mother Yashoda was thinking, we've got to keep Krishna locked up. So she locked all the doors, but somehow Krishna got out. Can you just take this? Somehow Krishna got out. Nanda Maharaj noticed that Krishna has got out. So Mother Yashoda, when she saw that Krishna's gone, she started panicking, crying and fainting. But Nanda Maharaj reassured Mother Yashoda, don't worry. Our son, even though he's as delicate and soft as a mallika flower, and he's gone out apparently to attack the Keshi demon, who's as strong as a mountain, but don't worry, I'm going to go out there and I'll confront Keshi. And with my two arms, which are as strong as pillars, I'll smash Keshi down. Nanda Maharaj said that. So then he went out. Mother Yashoda was actually manifesting symptoms of dread. There are five primary rasas and seven secondary rasas. And in the case of parental rasa, dread is a compatible co-rasa with the vatsalya rasa. In the mood of wanting to protect the child, the parents may become very extremely anxious and frightened. So she was in that mood. But Nanda Maharaj, he was in the mood of chivalry. I'll kill Keshi. Which is also compatible with being a parent, because the devotee's in the higher position, so feels himself to be in control and responsible to protect Krishna. Anyway, Krishna went out. Krishna was out. Krishna confronted Keshi. Keshi rushed at Krishna. Krishna got hold of his legs and started almost like playing a game with him, holding his front legs, moving him around, pushing him around. So Keshi was going all over. Then, holding his legs, he threw him for 100 yards, just like Garuda throws a snake. So Keshi apparently landed on his head and was knocked unconscious, but then he got up again and he attacked Krishna with his mouth wide open. And Krishna thrust his left arm into Keshi's mouth. And because Krishna's arm is the source of the Brahma Jyoti, this is quite similar, somewhat similar to the killing of Bakasura. Because Krishna's arm is the source of the Brahma Jyoti, Keshi felt his arm to be extremely hot, like a red hot iron. So Krishna inflated his arm inside Keshi's mouth. Oh, no, his whole body, including his arm. Yeah. So Krishna's arm inflated inside the mouth of Keshi, and Keshi suffocated in a very horrified state, something like a Rishtasura, eyes popping out, passing stool and urine simultaneously. But when Krishna had put his arm in Keshi's mouth, Keshi bit. And he bit really hard, very, very hard. So our acharyas explain that his biting made a permanent scar, created a permanent wound on Krishna's arm, which Krishna now accepts as being an ornament. He has like this bangle around his arm, but actually it's the mark of Keshi's teeth. So that is remaining. That is there on Krishna's left arm. So that was the end of Keshi. Keshi then pulled out his, I mean Krishna pulled out his arm. Sankarshan Prabhu?
I don't understand, as Keshi got here.
Yes.
And there's an underground, so is there any connection? What is
I was wondering that myself. So this is definitely when Krishna was at Nandagram and he came into the village. So how it all works, I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
It may be something to do with the opening and closing of the petals of Vraja. So when Kamsa heard that Keshi was dead, he cried. He started crying. He said, Keshi Daitya was as dear to me as my own life, but he's been killed by some cowherd boy who's crude, uneducated, and ignorant in fighting. Even though I've defeated the King of Heaven without difficulty, still I don't know the value of life. Rupa Goswami quotes Kamsa as saying that, and he says that because this hopelessness has a slight touch of attraction for Krishna, it is considered to be a reflection of ecstatic love in hopelessness. Some of Kamsa's moods are taken to be reflections of some of the rasas, or sub-rasas generally, like that. So this is considered to be a reflection of ecstatic love in a mood of hopelessness. Kamsa seeing that all his friends, all the big demons, they're all being killed. So in his last life, Keshi was one of those three brothers, if you remember. They went into Lord Shiva's or Durga's garden pick the lotuses. They were actually devotees. So they picked some lotuses to be offered to Krishna. But Durga had given a curse that anyone who picks any of these lotuses must become a demon. So Lord Shiva had to put that curse into effect, even though he didn't really want to. So the other two, they became Pralamba and Vaka. Anyone not mark themselves present? The other two became Pralamba and Vaka, and the third one became Keshi. So then Krishna went out herding the cows.
Did they ever see impersonal liberation, or is it not clear what happened?
I haven't seen. I can't remember about Pralamba and Vaka offhand, but about Keshi, I don't think there's anything mentioned of exactly what he achieved. But normally these people achieve impersonal liberation.
It would just seem like it's almost not fair, because they're not really demons as such. They're demons by accident. They're actually devotees, so for them to receive impersonal liberation seems like an injustice.
Anyway, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but curses are curses. As we've mentioned, there's quite a number of examples here, that in Vedic times, the big sages would curse for some small reason, they give some heavy curse. So the Vedic standard actually is very strict. But we're fortunate that the real Vedic standards are not being applied on us. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be here at all. It's just Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So much leniency is there. Yeah. So exactly what happened to them, as I say, I'm not sure, because as I recall, it's not actually mentioned. But in most cases, they get impersonal liberation.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita details that a person who does good is never overcome by evil. So here they pick flowers for Krishna, and then they get the worst possible thing considered in Vaishnava Sampradaya. That's merging in the Brahmajyoti. We consider it the most worst thing that's going to happen to you.
Anyway, they would, after some time, come back again. They'd come back again and continue on from where they had left off previously. But one thing we can learn is don't commit offenses. Because, you may get into serious trouble.
There's a sign there that says, don't pluck the flowers. But be careful about those signs.
Right. Yeah. Read the signs carefully. Yeah, there was no sign. They could have objected.
Huh? But we didn't see even like Kamsa, he came back to the colony, and Lord Chaitanya gave him two little cabins, he came through
the water. That's true. And some of the others came back also. Jarasandha, Shishupal, and Dantavakra. So maybe that applies to some of these demons too, but I haven't come across.
Come back here.
In Chaitanya Leela they appear. So then Krishna went out herding the cows, and they went down to Govardhan Hill. This is from Nandagram. They went to Govardhan Hill. And Narada Muni came and approached Krishna. Now, as we mentioned, Narada Muni is very concerned to accelerate the pastimes of the Lord. And he was already concerned that Krishna had forgotten. Actually, it's a fact. Our acharyas explained that actually Krishna forgot that he had come as an avatar, scheduled avatar, and he had to kill the demons and re-establish the principles of religion. And not just the demons who are coming in Vrindavan, but there are many other demons he had to kill. So, our acharyas explained that actually Krishna forgot. So Narada Muni had to go and remind him. So Narada Muni met him down by Govardhan Hill and reminded Krishna of what his mission was. This is there actually in the Bhagavatam and in the Krishna books, it's there. It's interesting to see the mood of Narada Muni. He's a great devotee, very great devotee. But he's not on the same level as the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who, if Krishna forgot something, they would tell him, "Hey, what are you doing? You forgot this." Now they might chastise him. "You're a nonsense. Why did you forget?" But Narada Muni, his mood is one of great awe and reverence. So when he came to Lord Krishna, he didn't want to say that you forgot. He didn't even want to say that. He didn't even want to suggest that maybe the Lord had forgotten. So what he did, anyone know what he did? Mahamantra Puru?
He said,
I mean, like the basic idea at least of what he said. Anyone else? No? What, the way he presented it was that he said, "My Lord, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're such a great person. Everything's under your control. You're so powerful. And I know that tomorrow, or even maybe just the day after, I'm going to see you kill Kamsa. I just feel that you're going to do this. And then, sometime later on, I feel that you're going to go to Dwaraka. And when you're in Dwaraka, you're going to build a big castle, big palace out in the sea. And I just have this feeling that I'm going to see you marry 16,108 princesses after killing certain of the demons who were, in the case of them, had stolen some of them. And I have this feeling that there's going to be a battle called the Battle of Kurukshetra, and you're going to take part in it." So, of course, he knew that all these things were going to happen because this is the standard pattern of the Lord's activities when he appears. And Narada witnesses these things so often. But he didn't want to say, "Krishna, you've got to go and kill Kamsa now. And you've got to do this and you've got to do that." But he presented it like, "I think you're going to do this and I think you're going to do that. And I have this feeling that I'm going to see you." So he actually ran through so many of the Lord's pastimes. That you're going to do this and I'm going to see you do that and I think you'll do this and I have a feeling you're going to do that. So many of the Lord's pastimes. So it's explained that as he did that, Krishna was remembering, "Oh yes, that's right. I'm meant to do these things." So by the time Narada finished, Krishna had resolved, yes. And so the very next day he left Vrindavan. The very next day. Well, some of it's just straight out of the Bhagavatam. Some of it, I forget exactly whose commentary actually, but maybe Vishnu's or even a number of them. But Krishna at that point was out at Govardhan Hill with the cowherd boys and the cows. So, Krishna, anyway, having now resolved, yes, I'm going to leave Vrindavan, I'm going to kill the demons. But he didn't just leave. He carried on herding the cows with the cowherd boys, as if nothing had happened, apparently. So then, we mentioned this earlier, just a matter of a couple of hours later, Krishna and the cowherd boys they are now in Kamyavan, which is a long way over from Govardhan Hill, maybe 20 or 30 miles away. So in just a few hours, they're over there. And herding... Is it? Ah, just see. So... they went over there. Then, of course, they were not really herding the cows. They were just playing, and the cows were following them. So they were playing like a Vedic version of cops and robbers, something like that. It is a game with three teams. There's the thieves, the sheep, and the shepherds. So the boys were divided up into these three teams. And then Vyomasura came. Vyomasura disguised himself as one of the cowherd boys who had actually been kept home that day for some reason, to do some duties, something like that. So Vyomasura joined, disguised as this little cowherd boy, he joined the side of the thieves. So there they were, stealing the sheep from the shepherds. And after a while, the cowherd boys noticed that actually, all these sheep, the number of sheep keeps reducing. It was meant just to be a game. But actually, these sheep are being stolen. Or these cowherd boys who are meant to be sheep. They are actually being stolen. So, there was only four or five of the sheep left. They didn't know where the others had gone. They were just nowhere to be seen. What had happened actually was that Vyomasura had hidden them in a cave. That cave is still there. Maybe you've seen it. It's hardly a cave. In Kamyavan, yeah. It's hardly a cave now. Maybe it was more of a cave then. It's more like a little sort of crevice in the face of the hill. But anyway, he was hiding them in there and putting a... there was a big boulder in front of the entrance to the cave.
That's where Charanpari is? That's where Krishna's footprints is? And right from the...
just down at the bottom, yeah.
You can see the cave.
That's it, yeah.
How far is
that from here? Here? Well, it's about 10 miles or so past Nandagram. If you take the same road from Kosi to Nandagram, or like to Vrindakund, and you just keep going, then you end up in Kamyavan.
Oh, so that's, you just go side road that goes down to Vrindakund, you just keep going?
No. No, the main road, yeah, then you turn off to go into Vrindakund in that dirt road, but the tar road there, you just keep going, and you end up in Kamyavan. Very nice place.
See, Nandagaon and also Nandagaon, what's the difference?
Nandagaon's like the... it's the Hindi version of the Sanskrit. Cool. Sanskrit for town is Gram.
That's
it's just Hindi. Gaon, right? Means town, village, sort of small town, something like that. Yeah. So Krishna grabbed Vyomasura, just like a lion grabs a wolf. The demon changed into his original form, which was as big as a mountain. Then Krishna strangled him. Krishna grabbed him by the throat, suffocated him or strangled him. Just like an animal is killed in the slaughterhouse. So Vyomasura then is the last demon killed by Krishna in his Vrindavan Leela. So that was around lunchtime. It was actually just later in the same morning. So that morning, Krishna killed Keshi before leaving home. Then they went down to Govardhan Hill, Krishna met Narada Muni. Then they went up to Kamyavan, and it was still morning, and Krishna killed Vyomasura at Kamyavan, late in the morning. And then later in the day Krishna went back, and who was there?
Akrura.
Akrura is not appreciated by the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Even though we take Akrura to be a great devotee, even very great devotee, he's given as an example of a person who perfectly offered prayers. But Vandanam, yeah. Offering prayers. But the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they don't like Akrura at all. And because Akrura offended the inhabitants of Vrindavan, particularly the gopis, by taking Krishna away, then Akrura later sort of fell down temporarily, became bewildered. Taka Jin, he joined the side of, I think it's Kritavarma or someone. And who? Is that? So he joined the other side to kill Shatrajit, who's the father of Satyabhama, murdered him in cold blood. Very terrible murder.
He murdered Krishna's father?
Father-in-law. Yeah. And then when Krishna was investigating to find out where is this gem, then Akrura lied to him. Yeah, so he became bewildered and he lied to Krishna, thinking to keep the gem, that he and his group could keep the gem. But then they tried to get away, and then Krishna forgave Akrura because Akrura was a devotee.
Did that occur because of the curse?
Yes, that's because of the curse. That's explained in the Krishna books, actually. Because of the curse of the gopis, because Akrura took Krishna away. There's a very nice description in Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami of what happens when Akrura is there. We haven't really got time to read it, but very amazing. Akrura is telling the inhabitants of Vrindavan that this Krishna has to go to Mathura to deliver his parents, meaning Vasudeva and Devaki. Because as far as he was concerned, Vasudeva and Devaki were Krishna's parents. He didn't know that in Vrindavan, all the Brijvasis were completely convinced that Krishna was actually the son of Nanda and Yashoda, which is true. So he was saying that Kamsa's threatened to kill them, he's going to kill them any day. And the only person who can save them is Krishna, their son. So he was in a very feeling, very emotional way, appealing to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, release Krishna, let him come to Mathura. But they are thinking, what's this man talking about? His parents? Vasudeva and Devaki? His parents? They're not his parents. So they were thinking, he's just trying to trick us, trying to fool us, so he can take Krishna away from us. So at one point, they sort of explode at Akrura, and they shout at him, "You thief! You liar! You servant of Kamsa! Who are the parents of the son of Nanda Maharaj? Who are these parents of the son of Nanda Maharaj?" They become extremely angry with Akrura. And Akrura's begging them, because he's actually feeling like that. He's actually feeling. He's begging them. He takes straw, puts straw between his teeth, and bows down at the feet of every single one of the ladies of Vrindavan and begs them with great feeling, "Please let Krishna come with me so he can free his parents." Anyway.
How
I'll just take these drawings and give it to me by just community.
Yeah, it'd be a great movie.
Sorry? No, he put straw between his teeth.
This is signifying humility.
Yes.
How?
Because straw is always on the ground. And it's just, you know, lifeless, dead grass, dry grass. So if you put it between your teeth, it means you're placing yourself down like that. Yeah. Anyway, so then there's a very remarkable description that Rupa Goswami gives, that then Krishna is taken away, and then all the inhabitants of Vrindavan get just completely devastated. Then some of them die, some of the gopis leave their bodies, and are then born, immediately born, in the families of some of the kings whose daughters Krishna married. And they just suddenly just grew up and became like young adult ladies. But no one noticed that they'd grown up so quickly. Others of them, Chandravali, was stolen by Rukmi. Rukmi, and taken to the palace of Bhishmaka, and there she became Rukmini. She became Rukmini. She was stolen by Rukmi, kidnapped by Rukmi. She became Rukmini directly. Yes, not. She's actually the same person. And then the 16,108 others. They were stolen by, they were kidnapped by Narakasura and then locked up, and somehow by the influence of Yogamaya, they and everyone else started thinking that they were princesses who had been kidnapped from their father's palaces. But actually they'd been kidnapped from Vrindavan. And then when Krishna came and killed, was it Narakasura or Jarasandha? Narakasura. Whoever it was. Is it? Anyway, whichever one it was, kidnapped him. Krishna came and killed him. So, according to Rupa Goswami, they weren't expansions of the gopis. They were actually the gopis of Vrindavan.
All 16,108?
Yeah. They were all. But somehow, due to the influence of Yogamaya, they were thinking that we are princesses, we were stolen from our fathers who are kings. Rather interesting. That's Lalita Madhava. Yeah.
That is it? I wonder how is it that later on Krishna meets the gopis on the battlefield, which time he had all his wives and he was established in Rome and he met these same men from the same
gopis. Yes, it's rather amazing, isn't it? Anyway, it's sort of
unlimited.
Oh yeah, but in Vrindavan there was mainly 16,108. It was just an interesting little slant on it given by Srila Rupa Goswami. What did you?
I always thought that Rukmini was Radharani.
No, Rukmini is Chandravali. Satyabhama is Radharani. Satyabhama is Radharani.
Satyabhama is Radharani.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the gopis are manifesting because all these
that's also true.
And they just expand themselves.
So, somehow by some transcendental arrangement, things are like this. The Vrijvasis are still in Vrindavan.
But so Radharani was still in Vrindavan because she was also manifested as such a moment simultaneously?
Anyway, I don't want to speculate because Rupa Goswami doesn't discuss it like in those terms. But finally, when they're all reunited in Dwarka, Radharani, or Satyabhama, who's Radharani, tells Krishna, you know, I wish we could be back in Vrindavan. It's the only thing that's wrong. Otherwise, we're all together and it's very wonderful. But I just wish we could be in Vrindavan. And Krishna says, well, actually, we are in Vrindavan. And then Lalita Madhava ends right at that point. Krishna says, we are in Vrindavan right now. So the Lord's pastimes, they're really, you could say, a lot more transcendental than we might think they are. You know, we think we can understand. We think we've got a handle on how transcendental they are. But they're actually a lot more transcendental than that.
Mm-hmm. That's because here we are in Vrindavan. And what we see is not what's here.
What's that?
What we see is what is not what's actually here.
Yeah, that's true.
So the same way Krishna can look at Dwarka and be seeing her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In this one bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Gitavari, he mentions, it's one of the Radhastika bhajans. So he mentions there, Uma Rama Sakya Sapi Chandra Rubini Radha Avatara Sabe Amyaya Vani. This is Uma and Rama, Rama Devi, and Satya Bhava, and Sati. They're all avatars of Radharani.
Yeah. Yeah, Mother Earth is an expansion of Radharani. From Satya Bhava. Interesting. So when Krishna killed, was it Mura? No, Narakasura. It was Narakasura. He took Satyabhama with him because Narakasura was the son of Varaha and Bhumi, Mother Earth. When Varaha lifted the Earth planet out of the Garbhadak ocean, from that contact between him and Mother Earth, Narakasura was born. And yeah, Narakasura was born, but he was a devotee. He became a demon later through associating with Banasura. But later, and then when Mother Earth found out about that he'd become a demon, she asked the Lord, please don't kill him without my permission. So when the Lord had to kill Narakasura, he took Satyabhama, because Mother Earth is an expansion of Satyabhama. And when he was just about to kill Narakasura, he asked Satyabhama, can I kill him? And she gave her permission. So then he killed Narakasura with the permission of his mother, indirectly. Anyway, I hope we haven't sort of muddled anyone's minds too much of these things. Let's just for a minute or five discuss about some of these anathas. Keshi represents very interesting anatha. The anatha of thinking that I'm a great devotee or even a great guru. So at least we may all, I mean, anyone, any aspiring devotee sometimes might think that I'm a greater devotee than I happen to be. It's not hard to do. So Keshi represents that. So what to do about that? Actually, Krishna tells Arjuna that, not in the Bhagavad Gita, but in one of the Puranas, Ye me bhakta jana pata, na me bhakta chiye jana. Anyone who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. But ye mad bhaktanam chiye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. Anyone who says he's a devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that wherever there is love of God, you will find that the person is declaring that I am not a devotee. I'm not a devotee. Like Lord Chaitanya. The devotees would tell him that, oh, you're such a great devotee, you have such love of God. And he would say, I have no love of God at all. Actually, I'm just materially attached. Because if I had love of God, how could I stay in this material world, in this body? I'd immediately give it up. But I keep maintaining this body. I keep maintaining my life. So this is the evidence that I have no love of God at all, but I'm simply on the material platform. So we should try and see ourselves, try and become devotees of the devotees, Gopi Bhato Pada Kamalayo Dasa Dasa Nudas, devotees of the devotees. Prabhupada would say, as many times as you put das in there, dasa, dasa, no dasa, no dasa, no das, and you just keep on, then that is the better. The more dasas there are, the better. So one should try and maintain a very humble state of mind. Prabhupada says that if you become puffed up, it can lead to disrespecting the deities, lead to disrespecting the guru, and then you fall down. So, rather one should feel oneself to be fallen, otherwise one will become fallen. So you might as well just feel yourself to be fallen, and the humble servant of the devotees, and you can become saved from the sanatha. Then Vyomasura. Right. Like Raghunath Bhatta, he would never hear criticism of anyone who even had just chanted Hare Krishna once in his life. That was what he took to be a devotee. Anyone who has chanted Hare Krishna once in their life. So whatever else they were doing, he wouldn't hear any talk about it, even if it was true. He would just walk away, even if it was actually true. He would just leave the place.
An artha that Keshi represents looks like it's quite similar to this, the deliverance of Nalakumbara and Manigriva, an arrogant pride from propped up aristocracy rooted in manuscript.
No. It's not so much that, it's more in the context of devotional service. Whereas in the case of Nalakuvara and Manigriva, it's more just on the basis of one's material birth, that one has wealth or some material opulence like that.
Also the false ego arising from attachment to material.
But it's more in the context of being a devotee.
This is more of the subtle. When you get money out of rising out of bhakti.
Right. Yeah. You may think that this is evidence of my spiritual success, spiritual advancement. That so much money is coming. Or
one of the other anarthas that's mentioned in Madhurika Dhaman is the name for that.
Well, Taranga Rangani.
Enjoying the waves.
Riding the waves, or it can be considered under the heading of a mistake made in devotional service. One becomes influenced by success that one may have in one's devotional service. One identifies with it, that it's me because I'm so qualified, like that. So these things like the wealth and material accomplishments, it's in the context of more of devotional service, whereas with Nalakuvara and Manigriva, it's from being born like that, aristocracy, coming from a certain type of family and being brought up in a certain type of way. Therefore one feels that one is very advanced on the material platform. Janmaishraya Shuta Shribiya, like that. Therefore one finds it very difficult to surrender. So this is more in the context of devotional service, that one may think, oh, I'm such a great devotee. And there's so much evidence. People give me so much money. Therefore I must be a great devotee. Or something like that. Then Vyomasura illustrates like the principle of dishonesty. What happens to you if you associate with thieves, liars, dishonest people? What to speak of cheating imposters who disguise themselves as devotees, Kali Chelas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would say that there is a devotee, there is a person who wears neck beads on his neck and tilak on his forehead, but actually within his heart he's simply interested in materialism. So he's Kali Chela, disciple of Kali Yuga. So if you associate, then you'll become like that. You can become a liar, you can become a cheat. I know in the history of our movement, because there are things like Krishna wanted Maharaj Yudhisthira to tell a lie, and Maharaj Yudhisthira wouldn't, and Krishna wasn't very pleased. Actually, because of that offense to Krishna, Maharaj Yudhisthira had to see hell. And his chariot, which normally would ride above the ground, it came down. And from that point on, he was just bouncing along the ground, the same as everyone else. I don't know if those chariots had suspension, or if the road system was good, or if they used tires or what. But he ended up bouncing along the ground in his chariot like everyone else, because he refused to do what Krishna wanted, to tell a lie. So, you know, devotees in the past sometimes have actually been quite enthusiastic about learning that lesson, that you can lie for Krishna. But what happens though, what happened in so many cases, that because the devotees weren't transcendental, they would be untruthful to the public in presenting Krishna consciousness, then they would be untruthful amongst the devotees, then they'd be untruthful to themselves, and they'd just be untruthful generally. They become like cheaters. So for us, better to learn the lessons of developing the brahminical qualities. There's an interesting purport, I think it's in the last chapter of the fifth canto or somewhere around there. Prabhupada says, a person, oh no, it's a verse actually from the fifth canto. A person who in this life bears false witness or lies while transacting business is severely punished after death by the agents of Yamaraj. Such a sinful man is taken to the top of a mountain 800 miles high and thrown head first into the hell known as Avichimat. This hell has no shelter and is made of strong stone resembling the waves of water. There's no water there, however, and thus it's called Avichimat, which means waterless. Although the sinful man is repeatedly thrown from the mountain and his body broken into tiny pieces, he still doesn't die. So that's for lying. So it's not like you can just say, you know, just tell a lie just like that. To get into this habit of lying is very bad. Prabhupada would say that Krishna is so beautiful that you can say almost anything about him and it won't be a lie. It won't be an exaggeration. But if you just try to trick people and cheat, then it's not very good. Rather than learning brahminical qualities, you'll learn, you'll encourage your own Kali Yuga tendencies. Prabhupada was saying like that. If you glorify Krishna, he's so great that he's greater than, you know, whatever. It can't be a lie. Even if you, yeah, something like that. Obviously, you know, if you glorify Krishna, you can use superlatives and you won't be lying, because Krishna is so great. He is the most, the greatest of whatever you can think of. For brahmacharis, here's a very good one. Actually, I compiled this when I was a brahmachari, so. It says here, this is about Bali Maharaj with his promise to Lord Vamana. Shukracharya told him, no, break your promise. Break it. You're allowed to break a promise if upholding the promise means you're going to lose out. So now break your promise. So Prabhupada says, to lie or fail to honor a promise given to a brahmachari is never proper. For lying is the most sinful activity. Everyone should be afraid of the sinful reactions to lying. For Mother Earth cannot even bear the weight of a sinful liar. Then there's a very interesting conversation, I won't read the whole thing. Prabhupada talking to Madhudwisa. Madhudwisa is asking Prabhupada, can we lie? Can we cheat people? Can we steal from them? Like that. And Prabhupada says, yes. Prabhupada chuckles and says, yes, but that is not by your discretion. You have to consult your spiritual master. Just like what Krishna tells Maharaj Yudhisthira. So then Prabhupada goes on to explain that Maharaj Yudhisthira was instructed by Krishna, who's God, of course, and acting like his spiritual master. So when he wouldn't tell a lie, it became sinful. But in our cases, Prabhupada says, telling a lie is always sinful. So that telling lies should not be taken. You shouldn't take the risk of it at your own discretion. It must be ordered by Krishna or by his representative. You can violate the laws only on the direct order of Krishna or his representative. That's all. So we should be very careful about getting into that sort of association and becoming liars ourselves. Oh yes, the notes. They're coming. Maybe tomorrow. Or if not, the day after. Maybe what we should just do...
Can you give us to make sure we hold a test?
Yeah, just run through the questions for the test. And then if anyone else has any other questions, then maybe we could spend a few minutes on that. So there are going to be 7 questions. 5 of the demons and the anathas that they represent, that is from Brahma Vimohana Leela on up to Vyomasura, any 5, from, but including, the Brahma Vimohana Leela, not before the Brahma Vimohana Leela, any 5 in the anathas they represent. Then, the characteristic or characteristics of the anathas which the demons killed by Lord Balaram, which they represent. And the information's on page 33 of the book.
Are you responsible for all the characteristics?
Well, there's just, it's mainly like one characteristic, actually, which
okay.
It would only take like one or two sentences at most. 3 of the subtle contaminations of passion. That is from that purport we gave you. We copied, printed it out from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. The Sanskrit and English. Has everyone got a copy of that? That purport? We gave it out, you should have. It's on the 2nd page at the bottom. There's perhaps 6 or so of them. So any 3 of them, the Sanskrit and the English. Got that? Then, the 4th question, Krishna, when he's trying to convince Nanda Maharaj to perform Govardhan Puja and abandon the Indra Puja, he presents Karma Mimamsa philosophy, and he presents a number of different, like, arguments. Actually, there are 6. We want any 3 of them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So any 3 of those arguments that Krishna gives to try and justify Govardhan Puja in terms of Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Then we gave you 6 principles of surrender, which Srila Rupa Goswami presents in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We would like any 3. That was accepting things favorable, that's 1. Then rejecting things unfavorable for devotional service, that's the 2nd. always feeling oneself very meek and humble, that's the third, and there are three others. Then, yesterday we discussed about different types of irreligion, Upadharma, Paradharma, Chaladharma, Vidharma, Abhasdharma. So, we would like the Sanskrit term for any three, and then just tell us in a sentence, or just a few words even, what it means. Any three. There was five, if I'm not mistaken. Five types of irreligion. And finally, when Krishna, when Indra came on the scene there and saw that Krishna was encouraging the inhabitants of Vrindavan to do the Govardhan Puja, then he started criticizing Krishna. But Mother Saraswati was somehow or other controlling his tongue, so that even though he thought he was criticizing, actually he was glorifying Krishna, but in slightly hidden ways. So I think there were seven Sanskrit words which Sridhar Swami extracted and then gave hidden meanings for. Bali Sham was one that Indra was saying, he's just a child. Vachalam Bali Sham. A talkative, Vachalam is one. Very talkative Bali Sham, just a child. So Bali Sham, hidden meaning was what? That he's innocent. I forget exactly what it was, but you all know it because you're the students.
English and Sanskrit.
English and Sanskrit, yeah. Vachalam was that, yes, he talks, but what he says is the absolute truth.